Hi, I'm Jay Washburn.
And I'm Joe Bendosky.
And this is Start Writing.
And today we are continuing our series on endings, and we are going to be talking about the ambiguous ending.
I'm excited. I love these.
You love these? That's funny. Okay. So first thing we always want to talk about is, why do we have an ambiguous ending? Why are they written? And we're going to cover that in two different parts, which is part one is type of audience, and the other two is story style. And so anytime you write an ambiguous ending, you run with the standard risks of, I mean, the risks of not having a happy ending. Any other ending you choose, this is the risks, right? You risk having a dissatisfied audience, or maybe they even feel betrayed. And we're going to talk about identifying the audience who's going to be okay with an ambiguous ending, and then talk about how to structure stories so that the ambiguous ending feels satisfying. Because that's the important part. You want them to be satisfied. So identifying the audience. So part of this is recognizing the audience expectation, right? There's clear, I mean, by the number of happy endings out there, whether movies, TV, or books, we know there's a lot of people who like happy endings. They like that closure. They like everything tied up and no loose ends. They like that, right? But there's also audience members who are not looking for that kind of closure in a story, or a happy ending. They are more interested in seeing a catharsis or observing a journey or having a life experience that they could never have individually. Right? And so we're going to talk about the kinds of stories that have these kinds of endings and how that makes it work for the audience. But part of it is identifying this audience. So in identifying these audiences, one of the things you can do is you find the smallest niche that your book really fits into. Right? You may have written a fantasy, but there's a lot of smaller groupings, right? There's sword and sorcery, there's dark fantasy, there's epic fantasy. And so you want to drill down to the smallest, but very much the exact niche in which your book will fit. And then you pick out the first top couple books and skim through and see how people felt about the ending of the book, as they mention it in the reviews. Now, if a book doesn't have a lot of reviews, there may not be anything that mentions the ending. But if it's got anything other than a happy ending, most people are going to talk about it. And you can see how people in that genre feel about that kind of ending. Maybe that's what they love about it, that it's not a happy ending, right? Like in dark fantasy, you're probably going to see that a lot because it is a dark fantasy. You're going to see fewer happy endings. They're going to be more complex, some more cliffhangers, some more ambiguous, some more tragic, right? And so that's how you're going to identify how your audience feels about an ending that is not a happy ending in any genre that you're writing in.
Well, so this this option for this ending, do you feel like it's divided among genres? Like, can you avoid, well, I guess there's certain types of romance where you need a happy ending, for example.
Yeah. Right? So, I mean, I think it's a whole subgenre. Now, a lot of romance still has happy endings, but there is like happily ever after.
This is the ambiguous ending is its own subgenre.
No, but there's certain genres of books where.
That allow it.
That not even allow it, but might appreciate it more. Right? Mm-hmm. They'll be like, yeah, I really liked how it wasn't nice and neat. Yeah. And you're going to see whole genres, which is whole groups of readers that are far more okay with that kind of ending.
Yeah.
Then like if you put your book in happily ever after and then end ambiguously, you have angry readers. You don't belong there, right? They do not want that kind of ending. They don't want to read that kind of book. Hmm. Okay. Now, the styling of the story can also impact how satisfied people are. So even if you're not writing in a genre that's really open to or okay with or even enjoys ambiguous endings, sometimes you can style the story in a way that it just works so well with the ambiguous ending that they're okay with it. And so that's what we're going to talk about here. I think I missed one, so I might have to come back to this. All right. So the first is the ending is a mirror of the story told, right? And so what this is you have a type of story being told, and then the ending really just encapsulates that whole kind of journey in a very fitting way that kind of ends up being ambiguous. So we're going to talk about the 1982 version of The Thing. So what this is they find an alien creature in the ice, and it will take over people, and then it uses them to either infect others or to kill them off. But they look the same. They still look like just a normal human being. And so what you have is this group of people in Antarctica, and they start killing each other. And the whole movie, you're never 100% certain when a conflict erupts between two individuals. Is one an alien and one a human? Or is it just two humans who have reached a point of paranoia and are trying to survive, and one of them kills the other in that moment? And so the whole movie, you're never certain who's good and who's bad, right? As these conflicts play out. And that's the theme and the feel of the entire movie. And the end of the movie is the last survivor from this station emerges after the place like blows up and collapses. And a scientist comes back. He had gone out into the blizzard to see if he could rescue somebody. And so you then have this final moment with these two men staring each other down. And again, you are not certain. Are these two humans about to kill each other in fear for their lives, or is one an alien?
So do you know at least that they are going to fight?
No, you don't even know that. You see them like facing each other, and the camera just pulls out, and that's it. And so again, the whole movie is about you being uncertain about what is real and what is going to be happening, and that is exactly how they end it. And so it creates this very fitting final piece.
So do you see the thing switch from body to body at no. times? Never.
I haven't seen the whole movie. I watched a bunch of clips and I read the synopsis, so maybe you do see it switch now and again. But so yeah, I know, I saw an episode of the X-Files where they did pretty much a similar thing. And every once in a while you would see it in somebody and you knew what it was in that person. But many times you didn't know who it was in and who it wasn't.
That's awesome.
So, yeah. So it creates just that fitting piece. You had this entire story kind of based on this idea, and they leave you with that idea. You are uncertain about how that conflict will go, if there'll be a conflict, if one is human, if one is not. You don't know. Just like you have the whole movie, you don't know. And it just kind of that fitting ending. And a lot of, you know, people, you know, some people say they were still unsatisfied with The Thing, but I think a lot of people just felt that it was just very fitting. That was just that.
Well, was I feel the like this journey. Is really common with the horror genre.
Yeah, very, very common in horror.
Because it like the ambiguity is haunting.
Yeah.
It like leaves you feeling chills.
Yeah, we talked about this in cliffhangers, right? Yeah. People, you don't listen to a ghost story to sleep well in your sleeping bag. You listen to a ghost story because you love that adrenaline rush. And now every little sound and creak the force makes for the rest of the night is going to give you another adrenaline rush. You know, you got what you wanted. Yeah. So a horror movie, usually they leave you with that because you came for that adrenaline rush of the jump scares and the suspense. And now you get to have that for the rest of the night while you're creeped out. All right. So that's ending with a mirror. So it doesn't necessarily have to be horror to do this, but what you do is you kind of create this mirror moment. And we will talk about this in another story that fits into a separate type here. Okay. So an ending to make everyone happy. Now this seems like kind of a contradiction with the ambiguous, but what the goal here is to essentially create a series of clues that indicate one ending or another, but you create clues that indicate a variety of endings. So in psychology, we have what's called confirmation bias. And essentially what it is when we have a belief, we will look for and remember evidence that supports it and ignore or forget evidence that does not support that belief. And so in creating the happy ending for everyone, you essentially cut off before that happy ending is reached, but you have left a trail of clues indicating multiple different endings. so that when people reach that ambiguous ending, they feel they know how that story ended. And I know, and they've got their evidence. They can back it up. And even if somebody else reaches a different conclusion, they too have their evidence, because those are the clues left by the storyteller to make sure everybody is certain in their belief of how the story ended. And yet they can pick the ending that they feel fits the story best. So, and we see this in Inception, right? You have this dual split. Is he in a dream or is he not?
Oh, he's totally in a dream.
He's totally in a dream. So, and so in the beginning of the movie, DiCaprio's character, he tells us these are the clues you look for to identify the dream from the real. And then in the final moments of the scene, there are clues pointing both directions. If you really break it down, be like, it could go. But the goal is not to create that ambiguous feeling. The goal is that you pick the evidence that supports the ending you want. If you want him to have this happy ending where he gets his family back, you've got the evidence to back up that decision. And if you want that, you know, he's chosen to live in a dream because it's better than his real world, you can have that too. There's evidence both ways, and you get to pick what you want, and you have the evidence to support that view. I was going to say, I don't feel Inception has as many clues as I would have liked, you know, because a lot of people still did feel like it was ambiguous. But for me, a really strong ambiguous ending that does this presents you with a lot of evidence, regardless of which direction you want to go.
Yeah. Can I just do a little tangent? So with Inception, the director / writer, Chris Nolan, commented on it, and it sounds like he has suggested that it's not a dream, right? A similar thing happened with The Giver. The Giver is a super famous book with an ambiguous ending, and she wrote sequels, which changes the ambiguity. Suddenly it's like, okay, this isn't one of two ways. It's this one way in order to lead to the sequel. And I don't know if you have any thoughts on that, but I think in both of these cases, to me, it's a shame that the author cleared up the ambiguity outside of the story. And I just think, like, if you have an ambiguous ending, don't comment on it. That's my opinion anyway. Like you've created a beautiful thing. Leave it ambiguous.
Well, some people don't feel that way. And I mean, what we're trying to talk about here is, what do you do to make people satisfied with the ending being ambiguous, right? I think the reason so many people felt Inception was so ambiguous is because there weren't enough clues. If we'd had more clues indicating both possibilities, I think more people would have been satisfied with the ending, be like, no, it's not a dream. Here's the reasons why. I've got 10 reasons I can tell you it's not a dream, you know? And people are like, no, it's a dream. I got 10 reasons I can show you. You know, I think more people would have walked out satisfied and confident in their belief, you know? And I think the arguments would have been far more intense too, because be like, well, what about this? Be like, well, it's confirmation bias. I ignore those. So that's the make everyone happy ending. By leaving it ambiguous. So, all right. The next one is catharsis. So in a cathartic story, a protagonist is trapped in some kind of life event or emotional baggage, and they need to overcome it so that they can move on. And a part of the story's success is in making the audience take on this burden as well. So now I'm going to tell you my example, and most people are going to be like, that's not an ambiguous ending, but listen, till the end, because okay. I'll convince you. Okay. So Rudy is my choice here. And the reason I choose Rudy is, one, it's a really good cathartic movie. And two, if you really watch the story of Rudy, the story is ambiguous, but they chose to cut it at a moment that it felt like a happy ending, right? So the story of Rudy is that he has these two huge emotional burdens in his life. His father's influence on him and love of Notre Dame and the death of his brother, and he promised his brother he was going to play for Notre Dame one day. And these are the huge drivers of Rudy's life. All his decisions, everything is driven by that emotional weight that he carries with him, right? And so the whole movie is his efforts to eventually get on the team and then play for Notre Dame, right? And so the final scene of the movie is, it's not a big game. It's not the victory or anything. He just gets out on the field. He gets to play once and that's it. And then there's this huge celebration by the team. They carry him off the field. They make a big deal out of it. He says, but consider Rudy's story. Everything that has motivated him and the thing he's worked his whole life for, he just got. What now? And this is where, right, so essentially, for me, the story of Rudy ends in the next scene. He's just graduated. He's in the stands looking over the field. And his friend turns and asks him, what now? And Rudy replies, I spent my whole life trying to play for Notre Dame. And I did. What now? I don't know. Right?
That's how it ends?
No. That's the scene they left off. Because that changes the victory into ambiguity. But that is the way the story goes, because that's been his whole life. And suddenly, everything that has motivated him, driven him, and given direction is done. Right? He has never had any thought beyond that moment. He has no idea what comes next.
Wait, so basically you're saying if you have a very realistic story and you can't shape the ending in a way that takes away the ambiguity, what you can do is cut it off at a point.
Cut it, yeah. That
feels unambiguous.
Yeah. So what happened, the story of Rudy is an ambiguous ending, but they cut it at a moment of celebration, so it feels like a happy ending. But if you really pay attention to the story, what does Rudy do now? All his motivation, all his direction is gone. It ended that day on the field. Right? Huh.
It's going to be a crazy sequel.
But I'm pointing out that you can create or remove that ambiguous ending by just shuffling a scene or two, right? Mm-hmm. All they did was just cut off the scene that tells you what Rudy does next, and suddenly it went from an ambiguous ending to a happy ending. So that's why I wanted to bring that up. And the same thing happens in the story The Life of Pi, which is an ambiguous ending, right? So in The Life of Pi, he is there's a shipwreck, right? And he and a small group of people are lone survivors, and eventually it's just him and the tiger, right? And they go through this big adventure surviving together, and then they finally make it to safety. And in the final scene, they're talking about what happened, and he changes the story from all of the animals to replacing them with people. And the tiger was his mother, right? And that creates that ambiguity. Be like, well, what did happen? Did he just turn them into animals to be okay with the terrible things happening around him? Or were they really animals and he just realized people wouldn't believe that story? But if you cut out that last scene, the ambiguous ending is gone. He made it to safety. We celebrate and we believe that it was the animals the whole time. Right? Again, that transition from ambiguity to happy ending just matters on the final scene, right? Where you cut that.
Man, so what would that book be like without that ending?
It would not be ambiguous.
Would it be successful?
Who knows? That's kind of a big question. Was that ambiguous ending so memorable that it made it a success?
I mean, I think it was. It's like, it's jarring.
Yeah.
When you get to that, you're just like, what? What have I been reading?
Something to make them think, talk, and consider, right? So this is a very common use of the ambiguous ending, right? To get people to think, to talk, and consider. So this particular choice here is the one, this is a mere method, but it also is definitely about thinking, talking, and considering. So, and this is the eternal sunshine of the spotless mind. And like from beginning to end, this story is designed to make you think and consider. So the story is about two people who fell in love, fell out of love, and then walked away bitter and sad from the experience. And that's the backstory to the whole thing. And so what happens is there's this new technology that will allow people to erase memories, specifically romantic memories of romances that ended badly. And so the story begins with two people who, like I said, they fell in love and then they got this memory erase done. And they meet each other again and they start to fall in love again. And so the story walks you through the first romance and fall apart as one guy is going through the erasure process. And it's kind of like a jump back in time each time it does that. But then we also see them kind of falling in love again. Now there's a bunch of other side plot lines that eventually lead to a disgruntled employee at the company sending out everybody's boxes. So it's got the recording tapes of them talking about the terrible memories and everything and the whole experiences. So these two people, they feel like they just met. They feel like they're just falling in love. And then they get these boxes that detail the whole history of their experience together, right? All the faults that they eventually find in each other, all the bitter arguments, everything. And they get to go through this in an afternoon. And the ambiguous ending is then, will they get back together? Will, you know, knowing all the possible terrible things that they eventually do to each other in a relationship, will they still pursue it? Because it just feels that good in the moment. And so, and again, because this whole story is about our own relationships, if we knew all the faults and terrible things we would do to each other about our romantic partners, would we still pursue them? You know, and if we could wash those out of our mind, would we, knowing we would risk falling in love with these people again? Right? And so, the big goal here is the goal of the movie is to get you to ponder these questions. And they do that by leaving the ending ambiguous, because you don't walk out wondering what happens next to them. You walk out wondering, if it was me making that choice, what would I choose?
That's a pretty heavy movie.
It's a pretty heavy movie.
Well, so just to summarize, in that ending, you leave it at the point of decision.
Yeah.
So that the reader has to wonder what the character will choose and therefore what they would choose.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So, and then finally we have a definitive experience that requires ambiguity. So you want people to experience a certain circumstance or situation. And the one that really fits well is a movie based on a Broadway play called Doubt. And it is about a nun suspects one of the priests has molested some of the boys. And so she brings, I don't remember if she brings in like a special investigator or if she's just trying to convince one of the other nuns before she goes forward with it. And she is certain and she has no proof, none. She's just certain. And so this other nun observes and watches and investigates and tries to figure it out. And the final line of the movie is the nun looks at the other one and says, I have doubts. You know? And the story...
Wait, the one that was so certain?
No. The other one who's trying to convince. And so the movie and the story is about encountering someone who believes something with unwavering certainty but has no proof to prove it. And the question is kind of posed to the audience, will you believe them? They have nothing to prove it, but do you believe them based on the intensity of their conviction? You know? And, you know, I think the writer is saying you shouldn't. You should have doubts. But at the same time, it kind of poses that question to you. Do you have doubts? She's got no proof, but she is certain. Because you encounter that in life. Right? So, the story ends with ambiguity because it's about a certain type of experience. You know, because when you meet somebody with that kind of conviction, it's hard not to believe them. But if there is no evidence, you have doubts. All right. Thanks for listening. If you want to contact us or request a certain type of episode, as we mentioned, this series was launched by a listener request.
Yeah, we love hearing from you.
That's at jbendoski@gmail.com, just Joe Bendoski. Or if you go to the website, that'll send me an email as well. That's Joseph, and then again, Bendoski, bendoski.com. So either way, you can get in touch with us that way. As we mentioned, if you leave comments on Podbean, I don't have a way to respond to those. I do read them, but I just don't know how to reply. It's not simple on the website. So if you want to support the show, check out one of our books. Jay has The Song of Locke and Starchild and X Dot. You can check out And I have the Skyfall Conspiracy, which is the first book in my series.
Thanks for listening, guys.